Well, welcome to all of you who have chosen to join us for the second part of our conversation on religion and the arts with Wilson Yates, Emeritus President and Professor of the Arts and Religion and Society at United Theological Seminary in the Twin Cities. This is one of an occasional series of conversations with leading figures in the field of religion and the arts offered by the Society for the Arts and Religious and Theological Studies, SARTS. These podcasts are another means of opening and extending the conversation to all who are interested in the intersections of religion, theology, and the arts, whether that be academics, pastors, artists, lovers of art, theology, and the life of faith, or the simply curious. I'm Bill Cahoy, Dean and Professor Emeritus of the School of Theology and Seminary at St. John's University in Collegeville, Minnesota, member of the Board of SARTS and colleague of Wilson's in his role as president from the Minnesota Consortium of Theological Schools. About our guest, Wilson Yates. Few people have been as active in scholarly and programmatic dimensions of the religion, theology, and art world as Wilson. He earned his PhD from Harvard in their program in religion and society. His first academic position was as assistant professor of church and society at United Seminary in the Twin Cities, beginning in 1967. And he remained there his entire career, serving as dean from 88 to 96 and president from 96 to 2005 when he retired. Throughout, he was an active scholar, even during his administrative service, publishing several books and numerous articles. His primary focus was theology and the arts, writing on various individual artists, as well as on themes such as the grotesque in religion, art, and literature, the arts in theological education. But he also wrote on such things as the intersection of religion with family planning, sexuality, law, race, and rural life. He took his position in religion and church and society very seriously. An interdisciplinary person at heart. We spoke in our previous podcast about Wilson's work as a scholar. Here we will focus on his more programmatic work in the field. Now, to set this up, among his more salient contributions, he founded the journal Arts in 1988, serving as editor for 25 years. He was one of the founders of SARTS, serving as president and chair of the board. He served as president and board member of the Center for the Arts, Religion, and Education at Berkeley, was the American chair of ACE, the Arts and Christian Inquiry, an international scholarly society. He served on numerous museum boards. He led the design, fundraising, and construction of the Bigelow Chapel at United, which received the American Institute of Architects Award for the best religious building in 2004. And he established the program in religion and the arts at United, now fittingly named the Intersection, Wilson Yates Center for Theology and the Arts. Any one of those would be a podcast in themselves. Welcome, Wilson. It's good to be with you again.
Thank you, Bill. It's good to be here.
Well, first I want to say on behalf of all of us who care about the intersection of religion and theology and arts, thank you. Done a lot of good work, made a big difference in this field and in the lives of many students who don't even know they were being touched by the arts, I suspect, in some of their classes, and yet they were. So thank you very much. As I mentioned in our first session, we realize that the division between your scholarly work and your programmatic work is really arbitrary. The two inform each other in a number of ways. They intersect, to borrow one of your favorite terms. But it's at least a framework, and perhaps we can explore some of those intersections and bring your scholarship to bear here as we go along. So let's get to it, okay?
Right.
A couple of questions. So if I'm not mistaken, you established the program in theology and the arts at United before you became president. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Right. Okay. So as a faculty member, how did that all come about, and why was it important? And maybe as you're thinking about that question, your answer to that, let me just set up one little bit of context. We spoke in the first part of our conversation, the previous podcast, about your scholarship in theology and art and the role of art in the spiritual life. If possible, if you could review that briefly, especially for those who might not have heard the session, And then describe how that reflection on the role of art in theology and the spiritual life led you to develop this program. So how did it come about and why is it important?
Well, I began to teach some courses midway in my career that dealt with the arts, and mainly the visual arts and architecture. So I had my courses intact. It was also the case I was dean for a part of that period. And in 1980, roughly, I received a grant from Lilly Foundation to write a book on theological education and their treatment of the arts. And so I ended up with 134 seminaries who very kindly responded saying, this is what we do or this is what we don't do. And we can second guess that music would be a primary one in most schools, but the visual arts tended to be down the road. That didn't mean the seminary didn't have wonderful visual paintings on the wall, but it meant they did not attempt to teach it and relate it to liturgical studies or to constructive theology or whatever. So the awareness that you can't just teach and assume that the treatment of the arts will be invested into the institution itself. And that's where I began to realize, but I also thought this more generally. For example, I helped create the Journal of Law and Religion. Mm-hmm. We needed more than just random essays scattered. We needed to pull together essays that would treat this subject. And so it was with the case of theology and the arts. We needed to pull together institutional structures and policies and positions and programs that would treat the arts. Now, we did create such a program at United, but before the program, if I'm not mistaken, we created Arts, the journal, and then soon after the program. Now, how could I, as a faculty member, recently become dean, but as a faculty member, a dean is still a faculty member, how could I create a program and satisfy the board, satisfy the powers that be? Well, I got money. I went to Lilly, and then later I went to Luce. And so when I visited whoever, the dean, the president, or the faculty senate, I said, this is what we would like to do. There was a we there. There were students. There were outside folks, clergy, who were really interested in this. And I said, we would like to create this. And of course, then somebody said, yes, but how are you going to pay for it? And I said, Lilly has said they're interested. Luce Foundation has said they're, and there were about three or four at the time. Yeah. And so they gave the go-ahead and I got money. Now, I want to take that very seriously. Money has to come from somewhere to create programs, events, even courses that treat theology and the arts. But there is more involved in that. You know, may I read a paragraph that I
wrote, an
essay, which I thought might be relevant to this discussion as it came up. I write in an essay called Theology and the Arts Legacy in a book, Arts, Theology, and the Church, that I help co-edit. I write, for such a field, now this is thinking of a field, as theology and the arts to emerge, there must be more than scholarly publications. There must be institutional settings where the arts are integrated and supported, including schools, theological schools, religious societies, conferences, consultations that flow out of seminaries, churches, and religious organizations. I'll There must be publishing houses that will entertain essays. There must be journals. There must be magazines. We must have these elements in order to create such a field. Further, there must be solid foundation support. At that time, I think that was one route for money. It may be individual donors at this stage of history. But we must have we must have major actors who in effect enter the stage center and are willing to underwrite by political support or by financial support or by religious support what the seminary or whatever the institution is trying to do with the arts. Now, there's a political factor there. You need to be able to deal with groups who raise questions in a responsible way. There is a need to find out financial sources. Is it a donor who really likes the arts but has never given to you in the seminary in the arts? Or is it some other source? And so you have to pull together different sources to create the interest and perhaps a field in this case in the arts. I want to say that sometimes a school will say, well, we have a course now. In fact, we're going to have two courses. We've got a person who's well-trained, and we're very excited about that. But if the budget tightens, the first thing to go will be these electives in the arts. So one has to work with that faculty committee that somehow oversees a part of the curriculum with the dean to see that it becomes necessary, a necessary component in the school's scholarly activity.
Well, let me pick up on that, Wilson. That's great. Spoken like somebody who understands the difference a president can make. It's a noble undertaking. But significantly, this program at United, I mean, United's a seminary, offers MDivs and other master's degrees, right. not a PhD, a doctor in ministry, but not PhDs. I think this was the only seminary program in the country in theology and art. It's at a seminary, perhaps, and you know, one of the few.
Yeah.
My question is, it's not a PhD program, which is to say it's not for specialists or those preparing for academic careers as faculty and scholars. Seminaries prepare people primarily for ministry in the Christian church. And in that context, a question that I'm sure your board asked often of you about a program in theology and art at the seminary: why is art important in preparing people for pastoral ministry? Why is it part of the mission of a seminary qua seminary?
Well, there are multiple reasons, and we talked about some of these before. That person who's going to be the clergy for that church is going to deal with the arts at the most sacred of undertakings, the liturgy. And as we said quickly, you've got architecture, you've got liturgical space, there's music, there's poetry, there's story, there are visual images, there's stained glass, there may be sculpture, the fabric arts and other art forms that are all present on Sunday morning at that hour when people are coming because they need something, they want something, and they're quite willing to give something. But the arts become the means for extending that invitation. Even the minister, who has somewhat more lyrical way of speaking, even the minister who is reading poetry from the Psalms and is doing stories from the Gospels, is dealing directly with the arts. So that's one reason. But insofar as that minister is expected to make sense out of the community in which that church is set, the state, the culture, then that minister needs to have the arts as one means for making sense out of the culture. And he's got an institution, that local church, to help him. It fascinates to me that some of our students, for example, simply created the opportunity of of showing art, of having exhibits. So they have four exhibits a year, and lay people underwrite that. It's amazing what training lay people have that's not been tapped. And so they're doing that. They have lectures. Lecturers come in. They educate the congregation to the importance of the arts, the most sacred of moments, that is the worship of God. And so this is something of why I think...
Yeah, no, that's good. How about this kind of picks up on some things that you spoke of in our earlier session, but the formation, and there's the education and then the formation spiritually and personally of the pastor as a person. So as part of the program of a seminary is to form people the spiritual life so they can lead people in the spiritual life.
And
what's the role of arts in a good formation of people in seminary?
Well, I think it's integral, crucial. I don't think it's ancillary. I don't think what it's nice to have to bring in at certain moments. And here's why. Because the arts, if we have a disciplined approach to them, we're talking about people going into the church or the chaplaincy or some form of ministry.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If these people can discipline themselves in visual arts or music or drama or a host of arts, discipline themselves in a way that they learn to listen. They learn to listen to what, let's say, the painting has to say. If you want to understand the experience of the Black community and its difficult move from the South to northern cities that were not necessarily welcoming, we go to Jacob Lawrence, and that's the series on the migration, in which he shows the victory, the hope, and he also shows the suffering and the disappointment that was the experience of the African American people. And so the artist helps form the spirituality of the minister by doing what? By then calling the person to the essential symbols, which are works of art themselves, the symbols that help him deal with God, with Christ, with the Holy Spirit. It calls them to understand the history of the church. Once again, I go back to Michelangelo. Michelangelo's paintings are never forgotten, but what is forgotten is the powerful spirituality he had in that last two decades of his life, which simply imbued through his art. And so the formation of the minister personally with the arts happens because art speaks to the person about the essential meanings, religious meanings of life. Mm-hmm. Art, if we're going to use Tillich's terms, calls us into the depth of being in order that we can encounter the ground of being. Art
Beautiful.
Has power.
Yeah. So let me shift gears. Abrupt, I know, but that was very good. Every seminary should have this kind of work in the arts. You were also a driving force behind the founding of SARTS, the society we're both part of, arts and religious and theological studies. There were other societies like this at the time. You were and continue to be actively involved in many of them. Why was it important to have another? Why did you start SARTS?
Well, one reason was because we did not have another society in religion and the arts or theology and the arts that was focusing on the academic and their work in the arts. We had marvelous groups that focused on artists who may teach in college. That's somewhat different than people teaching in the area. So the idea was to create an organization which would bring them together, allow them to get to know each other, to share their ideas, and also to be a platform to read their papers. In effect, it was to create an academic society, and we didn't have one that did that. And so how did we pull it off? Well, once again, we had some foundation support, but that didn't come quickly or easily, but it did come. We had support of people who were teaching in the field, not a large group, but an active group. And then we had some larger support of people on the sides who wanted it to happen. So we did create it, but it's not easy to create a society. It's not really easy to sustain a society, but the society has access to the publication arts, which is a journal. And this becomes a means of publishing the work that people are doing. So it was to nurture academics, teaching in religion and art, theology and the art, and it was to provide them a stage upon which, if you will, to perform, and it was to provide them a journal where they could place their writings. That's what lay behind that idea.
Yeah, that's great. As we get close to the end of our time here in the second session, which I can't believe how quickly it goes by, when you've been involved in this dialogue in theology and arts as a scholar and an administrator and just created some very significant institutions. You see that connection for your whole career. We've got lots of questions there, but maybe just leave with this one. What would you say have been some of your deepest, most meaningful learnings from a lifetime spent in the area of theology and art?
Well, I learned first the power of art to give us insight into modern culture, whether it's the suffering in modern culture or it's the hope of, that's present among groups. A second is, and that is to give us insight into the Christian church and our own history. And that was very important to me. I can plot the history of Christianity by bringing to you a series of artworks and setting them forth in the living room here in the dining room, and now we'll talk. Well, that would be my class, which I don't have now, but it was my class. I think that I was drawn, and maybe drawn first in a way, because art could be prophetic. My original discipline was social ethics. And so when I looked around for ways that the prophetic word, if you will, could be spoken, then I found it in art. And we find it today in Native American artists, in African American artists, in women artists, in artists of groups that in some way are discriminated against or denied access to the very culture of which they are a part. The arts also become a means for understanding Christianity in other parts of the world. Watanabe in Japan gave Japanese Christianity to, in many ways, the American setting. So I think most of all, and this gets back to your question about the formation of the minister or the formation of me, or who, is that art can truly speak to you. It can shake you. It can invite you in. It can give you hope when there seems to be no hope. And it can give you courage when you want to flee. Art has the power to speak to you in ways that touch your inner core, touch your soul, and enliven your soul, engage your soul to help guide you in the paths of righteousness, if we were to be biblical. I often think, in the Old Testament passage, I believe it's Exodus, where we have God, Yahweh, who comes to the burning bush. Mm-hmm. There is the burning bush, and you have the words, I am, and I am who I am. And we must take off our shoes. We must come on sacred ground. And I think maybe if I would expand the text, God was saying that there may be a lot of sacred grounds, and art provides one of them. Now, there's some art that is just plain kitsch.
Mm-hmm.
All kitsch is not bad. Every room should have a little bit of kitsch. Kitsch is a German word, which means simple art, silly art, art that's secondary, art that's pretty but goes nowhere. We're not talking about that. We're talking about this art that takes you somewhere into yourself. It may enrage you against the injustices in society, or it may calm you into some sense that God is, I am, is there. So the power of art is great, and for some people that will be music. And for someone else, it will be poetry. And for still someone else, it will be architecture, yeah. The arts. But the arts are therefore not ancillary, not added on, not enriching. But they are crucial if that spiritual life is to take on the depth that it can in a life that's so shortly lived.
Well, Wilson, I don't think we can do better than end on that elevating note. It's inspiring, as is much of your writing. Thank you just very much. It's been a delight to have this conversation with you, and I look forward to more.
We'll continue it. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Paul.